Asked to do is to talk about the Thailand GAP and the FAO guidelines, and the question whether the Thailand GAP can be a good tool for farmers and certification in relation to the global standard. So this is me, Mike, with Ajahn Tam, who I don't think saw this presentation until it's put up here, but some of her work is included. Briefly introduce the FAO guideline. Okay. Then some work on the comparison with the Thailand GAP, the results of that, how we think about the importance of the Thailand GAP and the guidelines for the trainers, and then some conclusion. Okay, now where did the FAO guidelines come from originally? They come from Thailand. Okay. FAO guidelines Majak Prathet Thai, so Geng Ma. So first workshop to talk about the FAO guidelines for aquaculture certification was in Bangkok. And it took a few years, but the approval of the guidelines took place in Phuket, Pitilao. Okay. And these were finally approved by all governments in the globe earlier this year. So this is some work that was started and finished in Thailand, and now is really a good global guideline on aquaculture certification. Okay, so Thailand very much involved in these. And why do we think the FAO guidelines are important? Because this is the first international guideline on certification for aquaculture. It's the first real international document on aquaculture certification that was developed with a strong participation from developing countries. So most certification documents internationally developed by Europe or US, so this one had a strong participation from developing countries, including a very strong role from Thailand. It's important because it provides a basis for development of particularly country-owned systems. So most systems are led by Western countries, so now there's opportunity for Thailand and other countries to follow the guideline and develop systems which are internationally acceptable. And it's becoming recognized by governments and by buyers as a basic guideline for aquaculture certification. So now we have to look towards developing the systems that are in conformity with these guidelines. And just as an example, here is it's Walmart statement, which, as you know, is a very big buyer of shrimp from Thailand. And globally, and what they're saying in future is that they want to buy certified seafood, including shrimp. They don't mind which certification system it comes from, except should be based on the FAO guidelines for aquaculture. Okay, so this is a very important guideline now for helping in the future countries to have the market access to large buyers, to importing countries. So this wasn't there before, but now it's there, and that's a baseline in which we can move forward. So what do these guidelines contain? I think there is a full Thai version somewhere that we can get to people later. But in general, they contain the principles of how to set up and run certification scheme. They have some special considerations. I'll mention those in a minute. They set out what should be in standards, the way of operating certification schemes, and they provide a basis for comparing certification schemes in the future. Okay, so this one a little bit long, but maybe these are some of the principles, and the reason to take these out is that the principles and the special considerations refer specifically to small-scale farmers, and this directly relates to the current project and the reason for looking at helping groups of farmers, because the guidelines specifically say that special effort should be given to small resource poor farmers to help them become certified. So this is effectively the reason for the current project. I know your bit's longer than mine. And in here, well, in English specifically, it talks about understanding the capacity of farmers and governments to be certified and building capacity. Part of it is about training, helping people to do better training of farmers, which is effectively what this workshop is about. So when we come to the end of the presentation, we'd like to talk more with everyone about what you think about training and what needs to be done to help small-scale farmers become certified. Let's just elaborate more on the standards and the main areas that need to be thought about in developing certification or standards for certification. So we can see there are four main areas: the animal health and welfare, food safety and quality, environment, and social aspect. And the other part is all about the institutional arrangements and the procedures. In fact, most people, when they look at certification schemes, they look at this, has it got something about shrimp disease? Has it got something about chemicals? Something about mangroves? But that's only one part. The real, a very important part is the institutional arrangements. And many people are looking very closely at these when they look at how certification schemes are working. And the guidelines, FAO guidelines, also give quite a lot of attention to how to organize the institutions and procedures of certification schemes. Around four areas: the overall governance, standard setting, accreditation, and certification body. And as Dr. Mohan mentioned this morning and in the discussion we had this afternoon, as far as possible, the different functions of standard setting, accreditation, and certification should be moving towards separation. And that's the international trend and one that we have to be aware of. So what is the message for the trainers that we can take out of the FAO guidelines, the Thailand gap? I think firstly, the trainers have, all farmers and farmers group have a very important role in helping farmers to achieve the equivalent with international guidelines and standards, so that we cannot just go to farmers and expect them to be certified tomorrow. It's impossible. So the trainer's role is critical. And most large farmers have easy access to the skills and knowledge, and it's the smaller farmers that are really the most constrained. So we have to focus on small-scale farmers in much of our training efforts. Hi, Tam. Okay, so the trainers, very important. Okay, just one point about training. The training is not the same as we have to separate the training and auditing function. So the auditing is about auditing for certification, giving a certificate. The training is different. It's about preparing groups for certification by someone else in the future. So training is about raising awareness of, the group approach, training groups, preparing groups for certification, other technical help that's needed. So we have to be very careful in separating these activities. The auditors should not be doing training. Trainers do the training, get the groups ready, then the auditors come in and do their work. So I know here we have a mix of people, and maybe we can discuss that a bit, but this is one of the issues we have to be careful of in running of certification scheme, not to mix up the functions too much. Well, this is where the things like the, you want to translate first, like having the manual, having a good training for the training of trainers is important, so they can be clear about their job. Going into the next slide, which is obviously not quite complete, the training topics, and you added some, because I did this at the last minute, I didn't quite catch everything, but the thing I wanted to emphasize here, there's a sort of technology aspect, and then there's the group aspect. And I think, again, people are very comfortable with the technology, how to don't use chemicals, effluent treatment, and all that. But in terms of small scale, the skills are really needed in how to manage the groups and how to help the groups. And this is an area where often additional training is needed for trainers to be able to manage groups. Things like organization, group planning, the internal controls, group these are very difficult. And people need, in our experience, also need to have skills in this area to work with the small scale. And it's not easy. So there's a technical, and then there's a almost social aspects. And I think Pete Leck down there maybe can say something about that, because she has some good experience, and Siri's been working with the groups, good experience of that. And of course the other thing is as you mentioned, it's the services. So where to get the money, where to get other technical help, and maybe there's market services there. But in terms of the scaling up, we can do a nice four clusters, and we can invest a lot of time in training and everything, but how to take that in a wider area. And you need, actually, it needs more investment, and probably FAO is not going to put much more money in, so this is going to have to come from within the system. Actually, the investment you're talking about, tens of millions of dollars here, so to really have an impact with small-scale farmers. So that's a challenge, but one that's important to think about. Yeah, of course that always comes up. What to say? I mean, yes, this is a question you have to address. I mean, there are examples where improving the practices on a farm result in more profitable farming. You know? So I think we probably don't have the information there, but if farmers do genuinely adopt better practice, often they're more efficient, they can be more profitable. Working through groups, they can get cheaper feed, cheaper seed. They can make more money through better practice. So there are opportunities there, but there are also sometimes it doesn't happen immediately. And maybe we can find some examples of groups, maybe even our four groups there, where you can look at whether they actually... whether there's some success stories out there that actually provide good examples that all you trainers can use when you're faced with that question when you go to a new farm. I think that's maybe a good... It'd be great to get the success stories together, I think. I think there's no one system here. Contract farming can work in some conditions. Sometimes it doesn't because of these issues. It would be really nice to have some good examples brought together from, I think we've got the groups, there's some other examples around Thailand. It'd be nice to see some success stories, and that would actually be good in the training materials as well. And I didn't quite get this slide right, but individually, I think this may be mission impossible, but as a group, it's more possible. I'm not saying it's possible, but it's more. The experience around the region is that it's difficult to get groups, but if it's done, it can work well. So if we can look in that direction, maybe. And I think that's really a great discussion there with many ideas for follow-up.